Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for March, Wednesday, March 1st. Nice to have you along. It's another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, in part because it's bone dry and somewhere either right above freezing or so, where we're not getting what's falling a little bit north of here, which is liable to slick up the roads a little bit. So be careful wherever you happen to be driving around the state as we get one day closer to spring, as we like to say around here. Coming up on the program on this Wednesday, maybe it's high time to legalize marijuana in Wisconsin. The state remains an outlier in the upper Midwest when it comes to legalizing pot, regulating its sale, and benefiting from the taxes that it would generate. Michigan made the move about 4 years ago, and later this hour, we're going to talk to the leading journalist in that state about how things have gone and what lessons Wisconsin can take away from it, as we talk to Kyle Kaminsky, our colleague at our Courier Newsroom sister outlet in Michigan, The Gander. Then later, showing support to control your own body. Sarah Godlewski's group, Women Win Wisconsin, is part of a larger coalition of organizations around the state, planning a series of at least a half dozen rallies throughout March designed to give women and their allies a place to show their support for reclaiming the freedom to make their own damn choices about their bodies and their health care. I added the damn, they didn't. They're nice people. Anyway, Sarah will be along to tell us the where and when of all of those rallies. We will get a weatherology update from meteorologist Michael Cairo in our next hour. And in our Civic Media newsroom, we'll talk to Todd Alba of the ever conveniently named Todd Alba Show. If you'd like to reach us by phone, tell us what's on your mind today. 844-967-2789 is our main studio line. And the Up North line gets you to the same place, 715-388-7155. And you can always spout off your comments by email, radio@upnorthnewswi.com. And if you use the phones, you will find one Aaron Zommers, who is standing by down there in Madison. Mr. Zommers, how are you?
I'm doing pretty well this morning. How about you?
So we got the microphone working again. What did you say? You had to crawl up in the ceiling or something to fix a wire? Is there crawl space around there? What's going on?
One of the cables for the microphone had a connector that was going bad. So during the show, I wiggled it to where, and I was just saying hello, hello, wiggling it until I got it to work and then taped it still like that. And then after there wasn't a show, I had to run it through the ceiling.
I will say again, we are building a beautiful state-of-the-art studio in Madison, right near the Capitol Square. It's going to be great. But in the meantime, we're making the most of the situation that we've got there. The Civic Media has grown so quickly, and there's so much more wiring and everything. So we're very thankful that people like Aaron are willing to do that, because if you relied on me for any of this technical stuff, you'd be here, and that would be about it. So thank you, Aaron, for taking care of that for us. Question of the week this week is about those Girl Scout cookies. Which flavor is the best, and what new flavor would you create? We've got a post over at Up North News on the Facebook page. You can put your comments there. Or this show is being seen live on Facebook on the Up North News Facebook page. It's also being seen on the Facebook page of Bull Falls Radio and of Civic Media. So if you go to any of those Facebook pages, you can put a comment under the live stream for what we're doing there. Now, we've got some other guests that we want to tell you about coming up this week. As mentioned already, we have Sarah Godlewski and Kyle Kaminsky coming up today. Then on Thursday, we have Joe Zepecki, as we often do, talking about the week in Wisconsin politics. And then our hometown health segment on Thursday with Dr. Kristen Lyerly will also include Suzanne Herman, somebody who has been working from a legal standpoint on eliminating what's known as the period tax, and what it is that, and it's not just that one, it's also one called the pink tax, where similar items marketed specifically toward women mysteriously cost more than when those products are marketed toward men. So we will hear about both of those topics. On Friday, we have our usual lineup of Courier Newsroom national correspondent, Kia Vakil. We have Mark Jacob, author and former editor at the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times. We're always talking about how a free press is only going to be free if it does a better job on its own of calling out misdeeds and not shying away or being intimidated by those in power. And then Dan Schumacher, UW-Eau Claire Athletic Director, has the weekend sports preview for us. And this just added, also on Friday, former Missouri Congressman Richard Gephardt. Dick Gephardt was a candidate for president back in 88. He was the House Majority Leader for the Democrats throughout the 90s and now retired from Congress. He is active right now in a series of community discussions around the country and is doing some in Wisconsin this week under the headline that I would call Making Democracy Bipartisan Again. And getting into these discussions, bipartisan discussions, to let people know the dangers of continuing to challenge election results baselessly, you know, when there is no evidence, and yet you continue to sow doubt and undermine the integrity of elections, that does serious harm, not just to Democrats, not just to the libs, but to America. And we'll talk to the former congressman about that as well. So we have a lot of very interesting discussions that are going to be coming up in the days ahead before we wrap up this week as we get started with the month of March. Oh, also tomorrow, I missed one here. Seth Hoffmeister from Wisconsin Conservation Voters will be here as well to talk about how conservation voters should be energized to be voting in the April 4th election. So much stuff yet this week for Up North News, and we will continue it with a sports update and good news for Bucks fans coming up next. You're Up North.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local.
The Eagles' Best of My Love is going to be one of several songs we mentioned during our music break coming up at 6:50 as we also give ourselves a history lesson for this first day of March 2023. First, a look at sports at 6:15. Giannis Antetokounmpo had 33 points and 15 rebounds, and so you know what that means. He was back in action. He was playing as the Bucks extended their winning streak 15 games now. After beating the Brooklyn Nets last night 118-104, the Bucks went 10-0 in February and they have now passed the Boston Celtics for the best record in the NBA. They got Giannis back after he missed that home victory over Phoenix on Sunday with a bruised right quad. The Bucks had to come right back from Brooklyn because they are at home tonight hosting Orlando. The Bucks have 22 games left in the regular season, and this is the first of six back-to-back games that they're going to be facing over this final 22-game sprint. More good basketball news out of Milwaukee. The Marquette men's basketball team has had quite a week already. They were named the sixth-ranked team in the nation. And then last night, they went out there and won the Big East Championship outright with a 72-56 win over Butler. The Golden Eagles went 16-3 in the Big East up to this point. There's one game left in the regular season. That'll be at home on Saturday against St. John's. Getting back to the Bucks, though, for a moment, there will be some interesting decision-making and chemistry coming up with Mark Lazary, Alex Lazary's father, with Mark Lazary deciding to sell his 25% stake in the Milwaukee Bucks. And the people who are most likely to buy it don't come without baggage. And so as much as we've been very fortunate for those folks who are follow the Milwaukee Bucks that, you know, Herb Cole purchased the team once upon a time and ran it well. And then certainly the Lazary group has done yeoman's work as well, getting us to a world championship. But now coming on board appears to be a couple, Jimmy and Dee Haslam, who have agreed to acquire that stake in the Bucks for about $3.5 billion. And you probably have never heard of Jimmy and Dee Haslam, but they are the owners of the Cleveland Browns football team. And that has brought some skepticism and some downright hostility after they, as owners of the Browns, decided last year to give a big fat contract to embattled quarterback Deshaun Watson. They handed him a $230 million contract when no other team wanted to touch him, in large part because he was facing lawsuits by at least 25 women for sexual harassment or sexual assault. It's important to note that Watson has never faced criminal charges and that he did settle nearly all of the cases, but it was still not a great PR move, shall we say, for the Haslams and for the Cleveland Browns. Jimmy Haslam was trying to defend the move. He talked all about second chances, but then he let this one slip, saying, you could say that because he's a star quarterback, of course, you know, which again just goes to show it was only a business. It's all about, you know, protecting athletes when they do bad things, so long as they go on and win. Now, does that say anything about how they will run the Milwaukee Bucks? Absolutely not. Again, they'll be part of a group ownership. This is a 25% stake in the team where the governor's post of the NBA team is rotating. And one of those other investors in the Bucks, Wes Edens, will continue to rotate every other year. Right now he does it with Lazary, but it could be instead with the Haslams. The Haslams made their fortune on truck stops, the Pilot and Flying J truck stops over the years. So again, the NBA Board of Governors has to still sign off on the deal, if I'm not mistaken. And at that point, Mark Lazary will no longer be one of the part owners of the Bucks. And then we'll see how the Haslams do as part of taking over this particular NBA team. Turning to some other state headlines, Governor Tony Evers has made some new proposals for building projects. And these are big ones. And these are big ones that are going to be made easier to pay for thanks to the good economy and the way that he has shepherded state finances up to this point. And as a result, there will be less borrowing required to pay for these big projects. The governor put out a proposal yesterday for large projects in the state. So this is aside from what's in the state budget. The state budget has a lot of routine things that come up year over year. And then there's also something more for, you know, what you might call capital projects, big things that the State Building Commission is shepherding through the process. And what Governor Evers is proposing are projects in 28 different counties around the state, nearly half of them directed toward work for the University of Wisconsin system, which, of course, with campuses all over the state means, you know, that's just law of averages. Again, if you're going to do a lot of building projects for the state, a lot of them are going to be part of the UW system. Now, the governor has proposed ambitious building project plans in the past. Each time, Republicans slashed his to-do list, which means some of the buildings that you were counting on to maybe get modernized were delayed. Evers proposed the updates. Republicans slashed them. Let's see, 2 years ago, Evers proposed about $2.5 billion worth of projects, and Republicans cut that down to $1.5 billion. And they did the same thing 2 years earlier. But unlike in previous years, which relied heavily on borrowing to pay for the projects, this time around, Evers is proposing that about half of the work is paid up front in cash because of the state's more than $7 billion surplus. There are some UW-Madison buildings in there. There is one that's, you know, close to my heart, $231 million to finally demolish the science building at UW-Eau Claire and build a new facility to house several programs. That building, it was definitely a Jetsons space age era building that was probably ready for replacement. You know, when I was there in the early 80s, it is well overdue. We'd tried to advance it during my brief time on the State Building Commission over a decade ago, and it is finally that much closer to fruition. It includes $182 million to demolish and replace the science building at UW-La Crosse, $84 million for improvements at a variety of Wisconsin National Guard facilities, and then a host of local projects. So again, much like the Evers budget address from several days back, this is the governor's proposal, and then it will be up to the Republican-led legislature to decide, you know, what to do with that list. A lot of it will be cutting the list for the sake of convenience and politics. Look for the things at UW-Madison and anything in Milwaukee to likely be on the chopping block because, I mean, let's be honest, they don't care. You know, they don't represent those cities. They're going to be looking out for their communities first. And even then, some worthy projects are going to be cut more for political points rather than, you know, a sense of service and a sense of duty, a sense of replacing things that we have all benefited from. And now it's time for us to pay it forward and make sure those facilities are up to date for our children and our grandchildren. Some of that work will be done, but not nearly to the extent that it could by the time Republicans get done with the budget. Again, we will hear repeatedly about, you know, spending and spending and spending. But again, we have the biggest surplus ever for a number of factors, including just good stewardship of the pandemic aid that we got during the crisis. And that helped keep small businesses operating around Wisconsin. It helped keep people employed, which meant that business revenue kept coming in, which meant that tax revenue kept coming in. And so these things have led to this condition that legislators, leaders, and others could only dream of for decades, that we would have done such a good job putting money in the piggy bank that we can now put it to use to make these necessary upgrades in everything from buildings to, you know, roads, bridges, programs, and people. Turning now to the state Supreme Court race, which is 34 days away now, there's a lot of talk about how the Republican-backed candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, former Justice Dan Kelly, provided legal advice to one of the state's leading anti-abortion groups. It's work that Wisconsin Right to Life and Dan Kelly have not talked about in much detail, though they don't really have to. It's enough to generate material that is being used by Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasiewicz and many others to make the case that Kelly would not be dealing from a point of impartiality, shall we say, if he were to be elected to the court. And by the way, let's make clear again, Dan Kelly has a 50-50 chance of getting on the state Supreme Court. I don't care what the primary vote looked like, that yes, progressives turned out in a big way. and Janet Protasiewicz got as much or maybe a few more votes than the two conservative candidates combined. But now it's just Janet Protasiewicz and Dan Kelly. It is just about who turns out. And while this is going to be far and away the most expensive Supreme Court race in state history, and it's going to lead a lot of voters to want to tune out, it is more important than ever to focus on turnout, because as Judge Protasiewicz has said herself, the evidence is clear that if Dan Kelly gets back on the state Supreme Court, the state's 1849 abortion ban, which has no exceptions for rape and incest and is very poorly worded for the modern medical age we live in, that ban will stay in place. This legislature will make sure it stays in place. And if nothing else, the restrictions will become even tighter, forcing more women, more doctors, more healthcare providers to decide to pull up stakes and reside someplace else. And that's something that's, it doesn't just reflect poorly on Wisconsin politics and culture, but you can look at it from a dollars and cents standpoint as well. It won't be great for the economy if we're continuing to use draconian policy interests as a way to push young people away from the state. With the ban in place, it's worth noting that Dan Kelly is endorsed by all three of the state's top anti-abortion groups, including Wisconsin Right to Life. There is an ad right now that's out there that references a 2016 letter of recommendation for Dan Kelly from the executive director of Wisconsin Right to Life. The letter came out when Kelly applied for an appointment to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Scott Walker did eventually appoint Dan Kelly to the Supreme Court, a seat that Dan Kelly later lost in 2020 to Jill Karofsky. But anyway, this executive director of Wisconsin Right to Life wrote, quote, "Dan Kelly is someone who I have known professionally for many years and who has provided great counsel to Wisconsin Right to Life in legal matters, as well as to a previous employer of mine, and has done great work with the Federalist Society in Wisconsin." And that's where we'll close, noting that the Federalist Society at the national level is the group that has done more over the past generation than any other to ensure that the Supreme Court eventually had far-right justices who would, and then did, overturn the women's reproductive health care rights that had been enshrined in Roe v. Wade for nearly half a century. It's that Federalist Society that's going to be coming in hard real soon for Dan Kelly in the Supreme Court race and getting people to vote for him or getting other voters just not to show up and vote at all. We'll talk about legal pot in Michigan coming up next. You're up north.
You are listening to WAUK 540.
daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Another one of those songs that we will be following in our music break coming up in our very next segment. But first, we want to take a second to talk about legalized marijuana and something where Wisconsin continues to be an outlier, frankly, across the upper Midwest. And so we thought we would check in maybe with a couple of our other neighboring states and see what we could learn. Is Wisconsin missing out on benefits? Is Wisconsin missing out on problems? How would this work? So we stayed in-house first because it turns out that one of the leading journalists in Michigan, which legalized pot a couple of years back, is one of our Courier Newsroom colleagues, Kyle Kaminsky from The Gander, and who works on a newsletter called The Michiganja Report. They do not lack for punnage in the state of Michigan. And Kyle joins us now. Kyle, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Pretty good, Pat. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you so much for helping fill us in and enlighten us on legal marijuana and the highs and lows, no pun intended, from it. I don't know if we have to go all the way back to when the earth cooled, but let's get pretty close. States at some point started the ball rolling on saying, we're tired of treating this as something on an equal level to, crack cocaine or nuclear weapons or whatever the case may be. Can you give us just a little background on what happened right before and during the decision to legalize marijuana in Michigan?
Michigan jumped into the game in 2018, and that's really when I arrived on the scene and realized that this would be in a fun industry to cover, and didn't quite realize how lucrative it would be, though. 5 years later, we're now looking at like a $2.3 billion in sales in 2022, poised to continue growing. So it's definitely, I think, outpaced initial expectations in terms of just popularity. But yeah, for a little 4-5 years now in Michigan.
Okay. All right. And now, again, now we'll acknowledge your these good points about it. There are these bad points about it. So let's start with the benefits. And again, apologies if we're having any internet glitches here. But as we ride through those, Kyle, what's your general overview of the pros and cons in Michigan since legalization took place?
Oh, well, the pros are obviously a lot of money. This is a big market, and that money equals tax revenue for the state as well. I just got some quick statistics here. We're looking at more than 1,000 grow operations licensed in Michigan, more than 600 retailers since legalization, sold $5.4 billion in cannabis products, hit a monthly high in December of $208 million. It's an industry that's really taken off to the point where it's actually outpaced our prior largest agricultural commodity of the dairy industry, $2.1 billion in sales in 2021, and marijuana has now overtaken that. And along with that's a whole lot of tax revenue. We just got a report yesterday from last year's sales, $198.4 million in tax revenue for Michigan. That's split between going about $70 million to the transportation fund, $70 million to schools, and another $60 million going back to the local cities and counties that allow it. So, yeah, a lot of money. Yeah.
And it's worth noting that, not all that money is coming from Michigan. It's coming from people in Wisconsin. The Wisconsin Policy Forum put together a report very recently talking about the experiences in Michigan and Illinois and notes that as of this month, 3 out of every 10 Wisconsin residents above the age of 21 live within an hour's drive of a legally operating recreational marijuana dispensary in one of those states. If you increase it to a 75-minute drive, half of all Wisconsin legal age residents are that close to a recreational dispensary. So that's Wisconsin money that's now going to Michigan schools and other Michigan resources. But let's stop right there and let's come to the other side of things. You've had some time to look at this. I'm sure you've talked to law enforcement and others. What have been the drawbacks since the decision to legalize marijuana in Michigan?
Honestly, I don't see a whole lot of drawbacks. I think there was a lot of fear at the beginning that there was going to be like undue odors in neighborhoods from grow operations. Covering it at the local level, there's a lot of concern about where these facilities would be located. Would they increase crime in neighborhoods? And frankly, we're just not seeing that. These stores, for the most part, look like Apple stores. I mean, they have their own in-house security. They have a whole section of the industry dedicated to secure transportation. I think it was a lot of fears of the unknown that might have triggered some of the reluctance in the early days in 2018. But in terms of consequences of any of that, we're not seeing it.
Does that include as well, the only time I'd ever heard much of a concern was related to Colorado's decision, and that there were instances or a slight increase in impaired driving. And I'll be honest, that was now literally years ago, and I don't know that I've ever seen any kind of a follow-up on that. Is there anything even anecdotal indicating that in Michigan?
Nothing that I've heard. I mean, I know there are challenges with determining how you were impaired on marijuana. There was a report that came out at least a couple years ago now on is marijuana in the bloodstream an adequate measure of are you impaired? I think just determining impairment for marijuana is one of the more difficult things. Because I mean, some people will smoke a joint and they will be unsafe to drive. Some people don't. It's difficult to tell. There's not a blood alcohol test like there is for alcohol for marijuana. So in terms of impaired driving, I'm sure there are more drivers on the road smoking because it's more available. Is it posing a safety issue? Nothing that I've seen.
The report from the Wisconsin Policy Forum notes that, again, the any evidence of the impact on things like car crashes has been anecdotal at best from states like Michigan, and that lawmakers will simply have to take that into consideration as they draft and consider their own marijuana legislation. So whether we're talking about, you know, impaired driving standards or anything like that, would there be, let's now turn you into an unpaid consultant for the Wisconsin legislature. Right. Is there anything in there? Obviously, it sounds like there's a lot that Wisconsin could borrow from Michigan, but if you were to suggest making any changes to the policy, anything to clarify, anything like, you know, that now that you get the gift of hindsight, what kinds of advice might you offer there?
At the beginning of the industry, there was a lot of focus on having the money to get involved. There were capitalization requirements for retailers, and it made it difficult for sort of your mom and pop operations to get started in the industry. So at the onset, we saw multi-million, billion-dollar companies really take it and run with it because they had the cash to do it. It made licensing easier. And I think there could have been a more dedicated focus to letting your local smaller operations get started in the industry without having billions of dollars to get started. That takes a concerted focus on social equity. It's can't just kind of open the doors because then your richest corporate folks are going to come in and dominate. You'll have the Walmart of pot.
That, you know, I hadn't even thought of that. That is, I mean, do you basically need a legislature to choose one direction or the other to let this be more of a big business enterprise or to take steps to encourage, you know, local, you know, Wisconsin-based, even, you know, family ownership?
Part of the legislation in Michigan formed the Cannabis Regulatory Agency and really left all of the decisions on licensing in that state agency. And there's been some evolution over the last few years. I think we're in a good place now in terms of how licenses are issued. It's no longer a political board that's voting on individual applications. It's being processed through a state licensing arm. So there are learning curves and just fairness in licensing that I think every state that enters cannabis is going to have to go through. But creating the resources of a dedicated agency to handle it, I think, is a smart move.
I get the indication from a Pew report about this that there are, again, these are more, it's not so much about whether to legalize, but again, the implementation of it. And that is making sure that dispensaries, especially the family-run ones, you know, understand exactly, you know, what they're allowed to sell and what is the, you know, the amount of THC that can be involved in these products. And that there sounds like there also might need to be more public education so that police say more people need to understand what the limits of the law are in terms of how much they can possess before they, you know, run afoul of possession, you know, statutes that might be in place. Do those things, again, sound like kind of just the working out the details that are going to be a possible are going to be needed to address in any state?
More or less. I mean, we have, I think it's a 2.5 ounce limit on purchases in Michigan. That's it's cool to have, but in reality, nobody's really walking around with that much marijuana. And especially if you're going to the retail store, you're going to buy a $40 bag. So the limit is essentially meaningless. Mm-hmm. I think it stops your kind of bulk. The idea is to curb the black market. You don't want folks going into the retail store, buying a bulk amount of product, turning around and selling it unlicensed on their own.
You've talked about a Walmart of pot, but we don't want a Costco or a Sam's Club of pot, basically.
Yes, exactly.
That's what we're getting at here.
It's important to note, I think, in Michigan, we have a two-stage licensing approach. So in order to have approval to operate a retailer, you have to have approval from your local municipality as well as the state. So this gives local communities the opportunity to decide whether or not cannabis is something they want in their community. I mean, voters approved it majority in Michigan, but it still comes down to the local level of whether it's a fit for your community. Most municipalities in Michigan have opted out, but the industry has still been able to thrive.
Look, from meth to fentanyl to, you know, other drug crises that especially rural parts of the Midwest have faced, I am wondering if this move appears to have made any kind of a dent in Michigan, where, you know, there are folks there that with pot being legal are less likely to engage in, you know, either creating or buying meth and other substances. Is there anything that indicates there's been a change on that front in Michigan?
People, if you want to smoke weed, are going to get weed, whether it's through the legal system or not. So I think the state, by creating the opportunity to get it safely and legally, has really... You don't know what comes in a bag of weed when you're buying it from a friend down the corner. You might have trusted folks, but at the end of the day, it's not tested like it is in the retail market. So I think just consumer product safety goes a long way in having a licensed market as well.
Now, for the Gander, our sister publication in Michigan, you also put together what you call the Michiganja Report. It is a free newsletter that you would sign up for at gandernewsroom.com. And I'm looking at one of your recent editions here, and I'm just going to rattle off the five headlines, and then you can pick one of them if you want to talk about. But the headlines include pot shops get creative, black market crackdown, some cities still snub pot, Hoosiers want to get high, talking about the traffic there from Indiana, and black-owned pot shops, which seems appropriate for Black History Month. Those sound like very typical things that you're working on. So even though you covered legalization, there is still a regular beat for you to work on a regular basis here, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge market. You know, the Hoosiers want to get high one is interesting because these are all folks that live in Indiana that want access to marijuana, and they're driving across the border and giving their tax money to Michigan in order to get it. So I keep on coming. I know, I think that's a good example of the opportunities that are being missed by not legalizing marijuana.
And then you look at the things that when I mentioned get creative, your article there says, you know, one place is offering a free night of skiing at a resort for customers who spend $50. Another can get a chance to drive off in a new Ford Bronco. So there's certainly no shortage of ways that good old fashioned entrepreneurship can get involved with this new industry.
Yeah. Well, with more than 600 retailers, you got to find a way to get creative to get those sales. And yeah, there's no shortage of interesting ways. I did get interested in that Bronco one, though, so I might...
Bet you did.
Next week, switching retailers here.
Kyle Kaminsky from the Gander and the Michiganja Report. We really appreciate all the background. Thank you so much for taking some time to visit with us, and we may need to call in your expertise again soon.
Anytime. Thanks, Pat.
All right, Kyle. Thanks so much. When we come back, Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio, WFHR in Wisconsin Rapids, is going to join us for your daily music break and history lesson. Coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
heat, power, and water are things
Here's your occasional reminder that despite any youthful sound left in my voice, you're dealing with an old man who hosts this radio show and is visited by Melissa Kay from locally grown radio, WFHR. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Pat?
So nice to have you here. For today's music break, we're kicking it off with the birthday of Glenn Miller, who was born on this day in 1904. And I'm not going to tell you I'm a Glenn Miller, you know, expert by any means. I do know of a couple of the songs. And as soon as I saw Glenn Miller, though, I knew which one I wanted to play. There's just something about Moonlight Serenade. I think that's just one of the all times. It will be around long after we're gone.
Yes.
And when people who are much younger right now say, Glenn Miller, who? They are eventually going to hear that song and they're going to say, I like that. They're going to hear it at a dance or something. And it's great.
No, it's a beautiful song.
Yeah. How are things in the Rapids area these days?
Oh, you know, pretty icy, but otherwise good. Good.
I definitely understand. We've had such a mixed bag of precipitation and temperatures above and below the line that, yeah, everybody just needs to be careful. The visual from around here over the past week was a Chippewa County plow and sand truck just smashed because it got rear-ended by a semi that was going way too fast down the road.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, so come on, folks. Yeah. Let's see. Let's look at the history books for this day. Yellowstone was established as the world's first national park this day in 1872.
Oh, good.
Have you been?
Yes, I have driven through there. Well, I rode through there as a teenager.
I feel spoiled because we went through it once many, many years ago. But then my older daughter, you know, married a boy from that area and lived basically right next to West Yellowstone. And so we've made frequent trips into it. And you just appreciate it more each and every time. Aaron, Yellowstone, you've been, you're going to go, don't care.
I haven't been, but I'd like to.
Okay. Well,
he
good.
Cares.
Well, yeah. Well, we'll add that. We'll add that to the bus trip. Did you know, both of you radio kids, that the very first FM radio station went on the air this day in 1941?
No.
I mean, Aaron knew because he looked ahead on the notes.
Right.
But, you know. but yeah, station went on the air. W47NV. I mean, it just rolls right off the tongue. Went on the air as the first commercial FM radio station. It later got a more traditional set of call letters, WSM-FM. And that sounds familiar, but don't confuse it. It's not the same as WSM-AM, which was and remains the radio station of, any idea? It's a Nashville radio station.
Don't know.
The Grand Ole Opry. So, but that early FM station lasted from 1941 to 1951, and then it folded because nobody yet appreciated FM radio, which I still find crazy that when they'd invented FM, a lot of people were like, you know, we're good with having all the static, and you know, you can't hear if you drive next to the power lines or anything like that. And
radio listeners, I can't believe it was only 1941. I thought it was around longer than that.
Yeah.
I also can't believe it because I know I always, anytime one of my parents would turn on AM radio for anything, I'd be like, what are you doing? This is nasty.
Right? But no, the, you know, FM was all, you know, beautiful music stations, elevator music stations for the longest time. And then eventually it was classic rock station, what we would now call classic rock, but then was rock and roll stations that started to appreciate it. But they couldn't get the AM stations to bust out of their top 40 bubblegum rock habit. So they would start on FM, and eventually everything came. And there is now a new WSM FM, but the original one that logged on this day in 1941 only lasted for 10 years. Let's really go old school on the music break here. Another musical birthday, far before Glenn Miller, there was this guy named Frédéric Chopin. He is the Polish pianist and composer, and this is, I don't know, what is this, Aaron? You picked out the Chopin for today.
This is Nocturne, Opus 9, Number 2. It's one of his most famous pieces. He's also well known for Clair de Lune.
Yes.
Okay. Boy, we're really going back now today, folks. On this day in 1867, Nebraska was admitted as the 37th state. 1975, Blood on the Tracks by Bob Dylan topped the album chart for the first of 2 weeks. And on this day in 1998, Titanic became the first film to gross more than $1 billion worldwide. And yes, you can thank me now that I'm not, again, playing the Celine Dion tune from Titanic. You're welcome.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. let's come up just a little bit on the music, and let's play Breathe from Pink Floyd. Because Dark Side of the Moon was released on this day in 1973. And now we have a very eclectic set of birthdays to share. Roger Daltrey is 79 today, lead singer of The Who. Kesha is 36. And it's Justin Bieber's birthday. How old is the Biebs today, Melissa?
I have no idea.
Oh, really? Come on, take
it. I really don't know. Justin Bieber, I don't know, 27?
29, not bad.
Hey! Yeah.
He's closing in on 30, which which may or may not lead to maturity and adulthood. We'll see.
I'm doubtful.
I'm not putting money on it. All right,
don't hold your breath.
We've been listening to Pink Floyd from 73. Let's listen to Rush from 1974. Rush released their self-titled debut album in the year to come. The band secured Neil Peart as their drummer and then recorded their second album, Fly By Night. And that's pretty much the extent of it. We don't have a lot from the 80s, 90s, and beyond today. We did play earlier Best of My Love by the Eagles. That was the number one single on this day in 1975. And we played Kyrie by Mr. Mister, which hit number one on this day in 1986. Melissa, over at Locally Grown Radio, WFHR, what y'all been working on the past week or in the days ahead?
Oh, you know, we like to keep things fun and exciting at WFHR. This week, we have another Pet of the Week on Thursday, and I actually get to co-host with that one. Seth and I will be on the air with James in the morning. And then on Friday, Representative Scott Krug will be in for James at his morning magazine hour at 10 o'clock.
I want to hear more about these pets of the week that one can adopt. I mean, are they, I'm assuming traditional puppies and kitties.
They brought in a rabbit.
Okay, not a Burmese python then or anything like that.
Not yet.
Okay, especially not with the rabbit there. So
no.
Okay.
Nope.
All right.
But yeah, they bring in pets, and then we talk about them on air and help promote. It's for the South County Humane Society, and promote their needs. Donations are always welcome. Kitty food. It's okay. Kitty season.
And you were going to tell us that the car market is still is still pretty hot, isn't it?
Oh, it's hot. Yeah, we decided to sell my Subaru because, you know, we bought the truck from the Porsche dealership.
Yes, the Nissan. Not a Porsche truck. Not a Porsche truck bought from a Porsche dealership. We quickly add. Yes. Okay. So you're selling the Subaru, or you sold the Subaru?
Sold the Subaru in 58 minutes from the from the time it was posted. We were at dinner. We got home from dinner, and there was a couple guys in our driveway going, "Yeah, we'll buy it."
Wow.
10 minutes later, I had cash in hand.
I'm not surprised. I mean, really, you could have saved time. You could have just opened up your front door and said, "Hey, anybody want to buy a car?" You still probably would have got it in maybe 58 seconds.
And I don't think I even needed to spend the 2 hours cleaning it.
No. They would have taken it, you know, just as is. Melissa Kay from Locally Grown Radio. Always nice to visit with you. Enjoy the rest of your week.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you. Hey, Sarah Godlewski is coming up in our next hour. You're up north.
Civic Media promised you something big to celebrate.